Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They go to the half almost exactly an hour after tip-off. They go to the half in Golden State, in Oakland, and the Golden State Warriors lead the Houston Rockets 54-43. And I can't tell if the Rockets should be closer because they've missed a dozen layups or if they should be losing by 30 because they've been just so overall bad in this first half, which is why a segment earlier than normal I said I need to get Geltz in so it's during halftime and we can just kind of focus and stretch out, relax a little bit, and talk about this game. Normally joins me at 20 past the final hour of the show. Today he joins me, well, right now on the hotline. You can hear him on Sirius XM, see him on NBA TV contributing from time to time, and follow him on Twitter at Hoops Critic. Brian Geltzeiler joining me right now. Geltz, what's happening?
What's up, Shawnee? How we doing, buddy?
I'm doing better than the Rockets right now, Geltz. I'll tell you that. What I don't know, Geltz. An 11-point deficit at halftime. Should the Rockets be losing by more, or should this thing be a little closer if they could make a few layups?
I think they are where they should be. Yes, they've missed a whole bunch of layups. They certainly have. They've missed some open looks also, and that's hurt them. But by the same token, you know, the Warriors are dictating tempo in a unique way in this game. The one thing the Rockets have done effectively is attack Curry. And where this game started to actually look like it may get away from him a little bit was when Curry was on the bench, and they didn't have him in the game, which is interesting because their strategy of bringing Curry towards the ball has worked well. Golden State's been a little bit more effective tonight than they were in game two of hiding Curry off the ball a little bit with some of those off-ball switches, but it's still been something the Rockets have done okay. Listen, the Rockets' issues defensively, sometimes it's, you know, you saw a bucket at the end of the first half where they're stepping out on Durant, where Durant's not hitting anything from the perimeter. So, you know, you want to keep from getting to the basket, and those are the kinds of breakdowns the Rockets are having defensively. You combine that with the fact that they're just not running enough at all. They should be running on made baskets, and they've allowed Golden State to slow them down, and Golden State slowing them down has been a smart thing to do because they've pretty much been able to use tempo to push the Rockets into more isolation, and that's really where they want the Rockets. The Rockets getting out in transition, those kinds of open looks, and what Tucker and Ariza did to them in game two, they've kept that from happening tonight just by controlling pace on Houston.
Brian Geltzeiler joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Geltz, where do you come out on how the Rockets should be running this offense just in terms of initiating it and engineering it? In game two, Mike D'Antoni, it felt like gave Chris Paul more of those types of possessions where, hey, even when James is on the floor, CP3 is going to be the guy who kind of initiates things. When do you think this Rockets offense is more effective, with James initiating things or Chris Paul initiating things?
I think it's for the most part, it depends, because here's what I'll say. If you're in the half court, it's James, James, and more James. There's nobody better than him in those situations. And he manages to find his way into the paint, or he'll hit a contested three over anybody. And the ball does move for a pass, for a shot. Generally, James is in starting possessions with hockey assist type of passes, but he gets it going there. But in transition, I actually think it's Chris Paul, because I think Chris Paul needs to push the ball up the floor for them. And I think that transition opportunities, whether they're layups or they're threes, are vital to the Rockets playing a high level of effective offense. Here's the thing about the Rockets in transition. To win in a playoff, Shawnee, against a high-level defense like Golden State is, you need to have sources of easy buckets. For the Rockets, those easy buckets are not necessarily James Harden ISOs in the half court. Some of them can be, but you have to get out and get some buckets in transition that are easy for other guys besides James Harden. So to me, you do need the ball in Chris Paul's hands when you're trying to push up the floor. And listen here, they've had a little bit of success running off made baskets. Harden got to the free throw line earlier, running off a made basket. Run, run, run. Listen, Golden State's a really good defensive team. They've showed you they want to slow you down. And Rockets' transition defense hasn't been bad. It's been their half-court defense that hasn't been wonderful. They got to start running a heck of a lot more and see if they can push this Golden State D.
Brian Geltzeiler joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Geltz, the bench for the Rockets, D'Antoni is obviously, he's slicing this thing way down, and he's been kind of forced to. Do you think at some point just a seven-man rotation is going to come back to bite them, or can they kind of piece this thing together? There's no solution for when Capella goes out, whether it's Nene or sliding Tucker over. That's the biggest problem. But your thoughts on the seven-man rotation and where the holes in it are going to be, other than just fatigue?
You know, I think he's going to have to figure out who he can use with the least amount of damage as an eighth guy eventually, because I do think it's going to wear guys out. I understand why he can't use Anderson, Shoney. We've talked about it a bunch of times. But Golden State doesn't allow you a lot of hiding places, and you need a hiding place for James Harden. So, you know, it's very hard to use Anderson. Nene is, this is not a series for him. You just can't put him out on the floor. The one guy that's interesting, and he's a veteran and he's old, but you'd wonder why maybe they would dust off Joe Johnson for 8 to 10 minutes in certain spots. And, yeah, that doesn't necessarily address the need for a big. By the same token, the Tucker at center lineups have not been easy for Golden State to figure out at certain points in time, and they have their advantages for the Rockets. So I do think even if it's another perimeter player, you have to get somebody else in there that is going to be able to hold their own for 8 to 10 minutes. And to me, I think Johnson's kind of got to be the answer. You know, I don't know why they're not using him. Maybe he's banged up a little bit. But to me, you brought him there to use him in these kinds of spots, especially in a situation where Bamute clearly is not himself and can't make any kind of meaningful contribution. That is damaging to the Rockets, not having Luke Bamute be able to give them any kind of productive minutes. This is a guy they counted on all season long.
Yeah, expand on that, Geltz, because I don't know, for people who haven't watched the Rockets all year and have only watched them, you know, just for any length of time in the postseason when Bamute has been either injured or he's been a guy who can't make a layup because his shoulder's not working. How impactful, especially in this series, is the absence of Bamute?
It's huge. Listen, he's one of maybe only two guys on that roster that can guard five positions. And when you're switching like they're switching against the Warriors, you need that kind of Swiss Army knife on the defensive end of the floor. He's been an incredibly effective defensive player for them all season long. Here's the other thing. A healthy Bamute is probably their best Durant defender. He's the one who's got just enough length to give Durant a little bit of a hard time. But his timing's not there. His quickness is not there. His conditioning isn't there. This is a major loss for the Rockets in this spot, just because you don't have enough defenders in the first place to be able to keep up with Golden State. Losing one of your key guys, one of probably your two best perimeter defenders, him and PJ Tucker, that's a huge problem for them. And there are certain lineups where they could go with five very strong defensive players during James Harden's rest, Bamute being a big part of that. And they're kind of replacing those minutes with Gerald Green, who brings his own strength in terms of what he does offensively. But, Shoney, to be kind, for the most part, Gerald Green can't guard a crosswalk.
Hi, Gelt, you always have one great analogy every interview. I like it when you say they can't guard your place in the line at the bank or whatever.
Yeah, you like that one better, right?
That's one of my favorite Geltzisms as well. Absolutely. Brian Geltzeiler joining me on CBS Sports Radio. Geltz, let's just shift gears for a second as halftime kind of winds down to last night's game between the Cavs and the Celtics. Is the game last night a case? I feel silly asking this because the Cavs have been so up and down in this postseason. But did they find some things that may actually allow them to live up to their favored status in this series? Or is this just a case of Boston's just not a very good road team? They've got to hope they win their home games.
A combination thereof. Listen, Boston's not a good road team, and Boston didn't bring a whole lot of intensity. And you look at a guy like Al Horford with the paltry effort he had last night, and it's extremely disappointing he didn't provide more on-court leadership to that group. They needed a little bit, for lack of a better term, a little piss and vinegar last night to get these guys kind of where the intensity needed to be, because they played like a team that was relaxing up 2-0. But I also think for the Cavs, listen, you know some of these role players are going to do a better job, but there were a couple things that are sustainable that they took out of Game 3. One is George Hill pushing the tempo and hacking early. I think it's a very important thing for them, for Hill to establish himself, to create some space for James and allow some other guys to do some things. Hill's a really key player for them. We keep talking about how much they're missing Kyrie Irving. George Hill's never going to be Kyrie Irving, but he offers his own set of strengths, and we saw that last night. The other thing was this, Ty Lue staying big when Thompson was off the floor and using Larry Nance in that role. Larry Nance is one of these guys, another guy that can switch onto guards on the perimeter and do a really nice job of that. They need some more of that for the this team that definitely struggles defensively. So they took some good things out of what went on last night. Listen, again, if I had told you they were going to win by 30, I would have told you Love went nuts. Love struggled offensively early in that game and didn't get it going until the second half and had 14 points, 15 rebounds. But that shows you they're getting it from other places. And to me, the Cavs' defensive effort was very encouraging. Listen, the Celtics are going to have to bring much more intensity-wise if they want to get in game four. And I will tell you this, and I normally don't say this at this kind of early stage of a series, winner of game four is winning this series.
Wow. Okay. Well, Geltz, hey, Geltz, I like bouncing my my sometimes harebrained NBA theories or hypotheticals off of you. And just this dawned on me after watching Toronto get swept by LeBron. I feel like when the offseason comes, everybody's still talking about Houston as a possible landing spot for LeBron, and we know that a trade is probably going to be the only way that happens if he wants to get, you know, a deal, a max size deal, whatever. I feel like every team in the Eastern Conference should be cooperative with the Rockets in assisting the Rockets in acquiring LeBron, i.e., they should be very, very enthusiastic about taking Ryan Anderson's contract off of the Rockets' hands just to get LeBron out of their conference.
It's probably not something that any of them are going to do. I don't think anybody wants to help anybody at this point in time in that kind of way. But I will also say this. One of the interesting things that I have seen and heard is the fact that Dallas is going to be very active around the draft week in being willing to take on an asset to be able to suck up a contract. And I think that's going to be a spot that if I'm the Rockets, whether it's LeBron that's involved or not, Shawnee, if I have a chance to unload Ryan Anderson, I'm going to unload that contract. And even if I don't know what I'm doing with the cap slot, I'm doing that anyway, because it's just going to leave them the flexibility to me. If it's not LeBron, which I personally, listen, I'd actually be surprised if LeBron left Cleveland. I really would have
said he
goes back to another final. But I think for the Rockets, it doesn't necessarily have to be LeBron. It can be somebody else that they're able to slot in. And keep in mind, we're dealing with a contracted market. You're not the $16 million player 2 years ago. Isn't going to be the $16 million player of this year. So it's going to be very interesting to see what's available, who's out there. And if I'm the Rockets and you can throw an asset in to have that kind of cap space for where they are right now, that to me would be a priceless kind of thing. But watch Dallas as a dumping ground for a big salary.
All right, I will. I'll be shocked if the Mavericks do anything to help the Rockets, but I will keep an eye on Dallas, Geltz, for sure. Last one before I let you go. The second half's about to get started. What are a couple of keys for both sides in this game? Obviously, the Warriors up 11, so they keep doing what they're doing. They should be in good shape. But what are a couple of keys for these guys?
Well, Warriors, first of all, don't get too hung up with getting Curry going. Win the game. Do you know what I mean? Like, they are making concerted efforts to try to run things for Curry to get him going. And although, from one hand, I admire that, and they're still up 11 and doing that, on the other hand, it can become a preoccupation offensively, and the Rockets have too much firepower that you can't go overboard doing that. You need to respect the fact that there is something as too much with that. If I'm Houston, we need to get out and push the ball up the floor. We need to play a much, much faster pace. But it's very interesting. You know, Mike D'Antoni got all fired up and was not thrilled with his guys' effort in terms of running up and down the floor and getting back on defense. So that may be a product of what you discussed earlier, the seven-man rotation. But they need to play faster. And it'd be interesting to see if D'Antoni would choose to get some fresh legs on the court to go a little bit deeper into his bench. But for the Rockets, speed, speed, speed in the second half. And let's get some threes off if they want to get back in this game.
Geltz, I got to say, this was a damn good rogue halftime show on the Game 3 of the Western Conference, Western Conference Finals you and I put together. I appreciate you being flexible, buddy.
Oh, dude, always my pleasure. It's not as good as your Super Bowl gamble cast, that I can promise you. but at least we wedged something in here tonight that worked out.
I appreciate you, Geltz. As always, we'll do it again soon, my man. Thank you.
Always my pleasure, brother. Talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you, bro. I'm Brian Geltzeiler. See, put over the gamble cast. Nice. The Super Bowl gamble cast. Yep, making radio history.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.